Now, when it comes to tough jobs in Washington, this one has to be near the top, serving as the face of the oil and gas industry. As the Washington Post put it, Jack Girard is about to become the most hated man in Washington. An exaggeration, maybe, but with the $4 and $5 gallon of gas right now, selling Americans and Congress on the oil business is going to take some work and a thick skin. Then again, you could say the same thing about representing the mining business or the chemical industry. And Jack Girard has worked for both of those. Right now, he's the head of the American Chemistry Council, and in the next few weeks, he takes over at the American Petroleum Institute as its next president. He is here with us in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Guy. It's good to be with you.
Do you ever feel like you are living in a Christopher Buckley novel, that famous book and film, Thank You for Smoking?
No, not at all. I've represented some great industries in this country. In my view, the three pillars that make us successful and the envy of the world.
How do you decide to get your message out? I mean, aren't you going to be accused by some people of trying to put lipstick on a pig?
Well, in this particular challenge at hand, the issues being asked by the public generally are very legitimate and, frankly, in my view, welcome. We need to have a robust debate in this country about energy, how we use energy, how we conserve energy, how we become more energy efficient. And equally important, what we do as we look to the future to have adequate supplies of oil and natural gas to fuel this vast economy.
We want to open the phone lines to you, our listeners. This is your chance to talk with the future president of the American Petroleum Institute. Where do you think America should get its oil and gas? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Jack Girard, this is not just an unpopular industry. I'm not making that up. People are furious. How do you reach the average American who spends more than ever now to fill their tank of gas while oil companies are recording record profits? I mean, whether it's fair or not, they're blaming the industry that you're about to represent.
Well, I think the importance here, Guy, and I think you've hit the important question here. We've clearly focused the public's attention is now on this question of energy. Energy comes in various forms. It's used in various ways. This debate, in our view, is a healthy debate because we're going to get away from polarized debates of 30 years ago, in which it was kind of a drill-no-drill discussion. And we're now finally focused on what are the real issues surrounding this energy debate. Why is gas over $4 a gallon? Why has the price of natural gas risen 460% in the last 7 years? We in the business of chemistry, the business I currently work in, we've lost over 120,000 jobs in the last 6 to 7 years. Why? Because the price of natural gas, which is determined by the supply here in the United States, has risen 460%. Yet for 30 years, we have placed off limits 85% of the outer continental shelf where we have vast natural gas reserves. This debate is a healthy debate as we stick to the facts. We can better understand what it's going to take to be competitive, to allow Americans to prosper with American energy. And so that part of it will be healthy, I believe, as we develop public policy surrounding the issue of energy.
There's been some speculation that you were brought on board, in a sense, to improve the image of the industry, particularly now when people are paying such high prices for gas.
Well, the individual that's been running the association for the last 11 years, Red Cavan, he's an outstanding individual. He came to the point of retirement, and that's what generated the change, if you will, at the American Petroleum Institute. But more importantly, regardless of who heads the institute, to me, what's great about this great country is we're all allowed to have our own opinions, but we're not allowed to have our own facts. And so we think if we have a robust debate centered on the facts, the public will become better educated, will have a great discourse, and hopefully out of that will come up with good public policy by Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and all others.
Leslie is on the line with us from Cody, Wyoming. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate your taking my phone call. I have a couple questions, comments. Being out here in Wyoming where we have all sorts of energy and whatnot, one of the things that I've heard is that we have some of the largest reserves in the world in, like, Colorado and Montana. And along that same line, I understand that we've had no refineries built in this country since, like, 1963. At which point I'm kind of wondering why we have to be so dependent upon foreign oil for our gasoline and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Jack Girard, why do we have to be so dependent on foreign oil?
Well, I think the answer, Guy, and Leslie, thanks for the question, is we don't have to be. And I think that's what's really part and parcel to the center of this current debate. You look at the great state of Wyoming, which is a very significant coal producer. Today, over 50% of our electricity in the United States comes from coal-fired power. Yet oftentimes we don't know that. We are having a climate change debate in this country right now. Coal is our number one source of electricity, and some people just immediately dismiss it and say, let's not use coal. But if we use this vast reserve of coal, which we have, some have often said the United States is the Saudi Arabia of coal. It's much more significant than that. The BTU capability of the coal in the United States is equal to the entire world oil reserve. So when we look at the resources that we're currently sitting on, that in many instances we're not allowed to develop, we can become less dependent on foreign sources. We have natural gas supplies in this country, which really dictate the terms of our natural gas for industries like ours who use it to create everyday products. If we were able to use those American resources for Americans, we would become far less dependent on foreign sources.
But of course, Jack Girard, there are consequences to using so much coal. I mean, obviously, its impact on the environment, for one.
The key to that, though, Guy...
Well, what prevents us from using it now? And don't we have technology where we can produce it without impacting our environment so severely?
Jack?
Well, Leslie, let me respond to that. And the answer to both questions is yes. Let me further explain that. Coal right now, we're working on carbon sequestration technologies, which would allow you to use coal in such a way that we capture the carbon as it leaves the facilities. The same way that we've captured NOx, SO2, and mercury in the past. So we do have that capability, but the technologies aren't fully developed yet. So we believe the best solution to our energy policy is to say we are going to use this vast coal reserve. We're going to develop modern-day technologies to capture these potential pollutants, and at the same time, we can use this vast energy resource. So, Leslie, the answer is yes, we can use these energy resources. We can protect the environment at the same time. We just have to have the political will to move from the two polar opposites, move to the center, and allow technology to take us to that next generation.
Leslie, so thanks so much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
And let's go to Stephanie now. Stephanie in Iron City, Georgia. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about where the natural gas or oil that's pumped out of the Gulf of Mexico, where will it actually be sold? Will it be sold to U.S. refineries, or does it go out onto a world market?
Well, there's a very important distinction here, and that's a great question, because while oil is traded in a world market and the price is set at a global level, if you will, natural gas is the pricing is established more on a regional basis. So the amount of gas that we produce in the United States, in Canada, Mexico, and elsewhere that really feeds the U.S. economy is really what will dictate the longer-term price of natural gas. So most of what's generated in the Outer Continental Shelf, particularly in the Gulf of Mexico today, comes ashore in the United States and the vast majority used in the United States. As I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, 85% of our Outer Continental Shelf, or these are the deep waters miles off the shores of the United States, 85% of that is not available for development today. If we open that up and bring more supply to the marketplace, we believe the price of natural gas will come down closer to historic levels.
But is the trade-off, and Stephanie, thanks so much for the call, but is there a trade-off as well? I mean, you open that up and obviously you make yourself more vulnerable to environmental destruction.
Well, Guy, let's think about that comment. And that's one of the great myths of 30 years ago in the 30-year-old debate. When we look at what's going on around the globe today, the United States is the only industrialized nation that does not develop those outer continental shelf resources. Europe oftentimes has a reputation of being far more sensitive to their environment, being far greener, if you will, than the United States. Yet they continue to develop their resources off their coast 20 miles out. We're talking 50 miles and beyond here in the United States. What is the risk? There was an unfortunate spill in the late 60s off the California coast. Since then, we have had no significant spills. When we look at the unfortunate events in the Gulf of Mexico, the storms of Katrina and Rita, they actually blew some of these oil and gas platforms right off their moorings, yet we had no reports of significant spills. Why? Because the technology is significantly better today than it's ever been. The risk to environmental harm is so small that we should be far more aggressive in protecting American lives and jobs with American resources and quit requiring the heavy dependence upon foreign sources.
I want to read an email from Bruce. Bruce writes in asking, there are commercials running now by the industry that you're about to take over, the petroleum industry. It states that most of the oil and energy is coming from North America. Most of the oil and energy we use comes from North America. If that is the case, why does OPEC set the price?
Well, it's let me step back and answer that more broadly, if I can, on a global basis. Bruce, to your question, we produce a fair amount of oil and natural gas in the United States. When you look at it on a global level, likewise, particularly the Middle Eastern nations produce vast amounts of oil and natural gas. One thing a lot of people aren't aware of, if you look at the 10 greatest reserve holders of oil and natural gas in the world, none of those are American companies or American interest. They're foreign governments. The amount of reserve controlled and held by U.S. producers is about 8% in the global economy. So in oft times, unfortunately, in some of these political debates, everybody looks for a villain. They all want to point a finger, and they point to different companies or different reasons why they believe we have a problem. The fundamental problem is supply and demand. The Chinese demand has gone up dramatically. Indian demand has gone up. And we have the ability in this country to mitigate those concerns.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Nona is on the line with us from Cincinnati, Ohio. Nona, welcome.
Welcome to your guests, and thank you very much for taking my call. Very quickly, here in America, there are so many companies that rely on gasoline fuel for their small businesses to get them to and from work, not to mention the truck drivers. We have heard in the past that one of the conglomerates in the oil companies have made over $400 billion in profits. My question is, why can't the gasoline go down from $4 to $2 and they make $200 billion in profits and allow these small businesses, as myself, that are working in an area where we use gasoline every day for 8 or 9 hours so that we can continue to work, but the gas company would make $200 billion in profits?
Fair question, Nona. What, Jack Gerard?
Well, Nona, thanks for your question. Your numbers are excessively high, but that's okay. Let's go to the fundamental heart of the issue that you've raised. And we don't disagree with the concern that's out there today. As I mentioned earlier, the price of oil and gas is set on a global basis. There are a lot of factors in play today that will dictate the ultimate outcome. As I mentioned earlier, the best thing for the United States to do is deal with the issues that we can deal with. In this case, bringing additional supply in the marketplace, learning to use energy in a more efficient way and to conserve more energy. I come from a small rural background. My father was a John Deere dealer out in southeastern Idaho, and I grew up driving a small delivery truck. I understand what that does. I just spent last week with him to get a chance to visit with the grandpa with the kids for a while. I know what impact that has on local economies, on local families. The challenge for us today is a question of public policy. Are we going to continue to allow these global factors, this great demand in China, this demand in India and others, to continue to drive up this price because the supply has been limited and demand continues to rise? Or are we going to have the political courage in this country to step forward and develop a policy that says we will use our resources to mitigate those impacts for average Americans, for all the rest of us, so we can compete in this global economy?
Nona, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you so very much.
Jack Gerard, will your industry, the American Petroleum Institute, the oil and gas industry, will you try to get Americans to use less?
Well, I think it's important, Guy, that overall, when we look at an energy policy in the United States, it has to be comprehensive. There is not a silver bullet here to answer the broader question. So to your point, absolutely. We need to be more energy efficient in what we do. We need to conserve more. We need to find alternative forms of energy. And you see many of the folks in the oil and gas business investing heavily in these areas. We need to look at wind. We need to look at renewables. We need to look at more capacity to generate electricity from coal-fired power in a clean way, from nuclear energy, and the list goes on and on. So at the end of the day, this isn't about one particular form of energy over another. We have a vast economy. We have to compete in a global economy. So we need to look at every solution and to develop a comprehensive approach and get away from this pointing fingers at each other. We need to get away from partisan bickering, trying to gain political advantage, and say, what's in the best interest of Americans, and what can we do with American resources to protect the interests of our people?
Jack Girard is currently the president and CEO of the American Chemistry Council. This fall, he takes over as a new president of the American Petroleum Institute, representing the oil and gas industry. Jack Girard, thanks for coming in, and good luck.
Thank you, Guy. Appreciate it.
Coming up, how old is too old to be the president? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.